Okay. Today is the official meeting of the committee. As we all know that we meet on Tuesdays at this time. That's according to the program of Parliament. We are today going to be considering a presentation from Transnet on their 300 billion infrastructure plan or program. We are also going to be getting a briefing from the department on their quarterly report. That is the last quarter of the financial year 2011-12. I'm reliably informed that we have here the Transnet people, obviously the Department of Public Enterprise here with us. We also have, we also have the department present, our Department of the Economic Development Department. We have the media present here and the PMG, which is the Parliamentary Monitoring Group, represented present here. I think it's common knowledge that the government has embarked on a very, very ambitious program, infrastructure program, under the PICC leadership. And those who went to the conference early this year would, of the department, would also have realized that the main theme there was on infrastructure implementation. this is quite exciting, and therefore we felt as a committee that we don't want to be left out, but also to have a first-hand understanding of what this infrastructure program is all about. But then we felt we should start with the Transnet because they have quite a huge budget of about 300 billion. Just to have a clear understanding of what is going to understand, what are they going to be implementing with that particular amount of money. I know that Transnet has already presented to various committees, portfolio committees in Parliament, and we really want to appreciate the fact that you do not tire, but you felt that you should continue informing people so that whenever we talk, we should talk from an informed position. And this is government program, but it's also the country's program. So as members of parliament, as people who interact with communities, should be able to explain what really is the government planning in terms of this. So hence we have this presentation. And apart from that is the fact that we are in the Economic Development Portfolio Committee, which is also overseeing the implementation of our growth path, National Growth Path, which is a program or framework that is going to see to it that there is economic development and there is economic growth in the country. So if we improve infrastructure, we obviously are impacting on the socio-economic issues that are affecting the people on the ground. And it can also be something beneficial also for us to understand so that we can be disseminators of this information. I was not informed as to who will be making the presentation from the Transnet side, but because we're interacting for the first time with you, let me use this opportunity to introduce the members of the Portfolio Committee to you so that you know exactly who are you interacting with. I don't know whether it's Mr. Mdefeng, so from Mr. Gama who will be this.
Okay.
Can I start with the member on my extreme right? Is Mr. Mabasa. Some of you would know him as Bob, Mr. Mabasa, who's representing the ANC in the committee. Next to him is Mr. Hussein, who's representing the DA in the committee. Next to Mr. Hussein is Mr. Mubu, also representing the DA in the committee. We have next to them Mr. Mubu, Mr. Julie, who is the whip, also the whip of the committee, representing the ANC in the committee. We have next to him Meto Tezi, who's representing the ANC in the committee. I don't see any other members here. Okay. Next to Meto Tezi is our committee secretary, Ms. Kaka, Noluthando Kaka. She is our committee secretary. And then on my left hand side is the action. Yes, I struggle with his surname. That's why I always call him Action. And I don't think he'll mind to be called Action. Action. Okay, Action. My name is Matulara Coleman, the chair of the committee. May I then hand over to yourself? I know there's the acting DG of the department. I met him outside. Oh, yes. Can you introduce members from the department? Because I can see there's a delegation also from the department before we go to the CPA.
Good morning, honorable members and honorable chairperson. I'm Sadim Mauser, the acting director general for the Economic Development Department. We have a delegation with us this morning, the Deputy Director General, Ms. Neva Magetla, who's right at the end on my left-hand side, and opposite her at the back is Mr. Sipon Debele, who's the Chief Director in the department. Then Molefi Matsumela, the Human Resource Director or Executive Member, and then Mr. Zweli Momeka, who is the Chief Financial Officer, and then Ms. Ntukozo Velakazi, who is in the office of the DG next to me, and then Ms. Pumela Salela, who is also the Chief Director in the department. Chairperson, that's the delegation, and the team is here to support me in presenting and answering the presentation on our fourth quarter report. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Malta. Can we then hear from the DPE? Who's here?
Good morning. I'm Adam Seedat, Chief Director from Department of Public Enterprises.
I didn't hear that. I heard only the last part of what you were saying. Okay. Thank you. Can we now hand over to Transnet, Mr. Musa?
Thank you, Chair. I will introduce the people that are with me from Transnet. Mr. Ezindra Naidu, General Manager in the Planning Division. Shala Pillay, Acting Chief Executive for Transnet Port Terminal. Nonkululeko Sishi, Group Executive Human Resources. Mr. Martin Sisapelo, who is the senior manager in the office of the group chief executive. My name is Brian Munise. I'm the group chief executive, Transnet. And Mr. Siyabonga Gama, chief executive for Transnet Freight Rail. And Mr. Tao Murray, chief executive for National Port Authority.
Thank you very much. You may then proceed with the presentation. Thank you.
Chair, the presentation will cover the market demand strategy, as well as a detail on the some of the mega projects that we will be undertaking. These are not all the projects that we will be undertaking with the 300 billion, but some of the key projects that we will undertake with the market demand strategy. The market demand strategy, in short, is a 300 billion capital investment program over a period of 7 years. With the 300 billion, we will expand our rail, port, and pipeline infrastructure. We will increase capacity to meet the market demand for services in rail, ports, and pipelines. It will be built on the financial stability and strength of the company. So we will not be making any requests from the fiscus, and it will be anchored on significant productivity and operational efficiency improvements. It will focus on a modal shift of the transportation of freight from road to rail, and it will enable economic growth and create jobs, and focus on skills development, localization, empowerment, and transformation opportunities. On to the next slide. The major enablers of the market demand strategy will be the capital investment of 300 billion. Over the last 7 years, Transnet invested 118 billion in capital expenditure. We are changing the game now and investing 300 billion over the next 7 years. Our personnel count will increase from 59,000 to 74,000, which is a 25% increase. Export coal in million tons, we will increase our export coal from 68 million tons to 98 million tons, which is a 44% increase over 7 years. Iron ore from 53 to 83 million tons, general freight business from 80 to 170, and containers from 4.3 million containers handled in our ports to 7.6 million containers handled in our ports. Our revenue will increase from 46 billion to 128 billion, which means at the end of the 7 years, if all goes according to plan, Transnet will be three times bigger than what it is from a financial position. Our EBITDA will increase from 19 to 68 billion, and cash flows generated from activities from 16 billion to 51 billion. We will maintain a solid financial position. Our gearing, our EBITDA margin will increase from 41.2%, which is the current 41.2% margin, to at its peak, 54.9. It is important to emphasize at this point that our EBITDA margin will not increase as a result of price increases in tariffs. The main source of the increase in the EBITDA margin will be volumes. As I indicated in the previous slide, that we will be transporting more goods. And the reason the EBITDA margin increases with volumes is because if you're already transporting 100 containers on rail, the additional cost of transporting an extra container is lower than the cost of transporting the previous container. Because the rail is already there, so when you put an additional container, the cost of transporting that container is already on a rail, on a train that is already moving, so it is lower. And so that increases your margins, so the marginal cost, as the marginal cost decrease with higher volumes. Our return on total assets will be 13.3% after the 7 years. If you look at that red line, 12.2%, that is our cost of capital. To the extent that our returns are not able to cover the cost of capital, we are in fact destroying value in the company. And so this market demand strategy is in fact a strategy to turn the situation around to improve our return on total assets such that it is at least above the cost of capital so that we stop destroying value. And so the difference between the 7.3, for example, and 11.12 and the 12.2% is shrinkage of the Transnet balance sheet. And so we're going to try and reverse this trend. We think that this trend can be reversed earlier, Chairperson, because we think that with better cash management, with better credit ratings, credit outlook from the sovereign, we can reduce our cost of capital and so bring the red line down as we improve our return on total assets. We also think that we can improve our return on total assets faster than what is predicted here. So this is a conservative picture of how soon we can turn the company around. Our gearing will stay below the 50% level, which is determined by our lenders in the covenants that we have with them. So we contracted with the people that have already lended money to Transnet that the Transnet gearing will stay at 50%, below 50%, and if it goes above 50%, it will be an act of default. So we will maintain gearing at below 50%. These gearing numbers are also a bit conservative because, in fact, indications are that for 11-12, we will come to below the 43.2% that is projected there. So the worst case will be around 14-15, where we will take gearing to about 47%. Cash interest cover, 3 times is also our default level in terms of the covenant. And we will keep cash interest cover above 3 times and improving over the 7-year period. These are also conservative because indications are that our cash interest cover for 11-12 as we close this, we'll find out when we do the financials, audited financials, will be better than the 3.4%. How we will fund the 300 billion, 200 billion will come from the strong financial position from our own sources. The government has a zero dividend policy, so the 200 billion will be funded from the reinvestment of our profits. The 87 billion, 86.5 billion over the 7-year period, will be funded in the market. As you can see, our funding requirement over the 7-year period, if you look at the bar graphs at the top left-hand corner, in 12-13, we expect that cash from operations will be about 18.6 billion. We will then invest 31.2 billion in capital expenditure, which means there will be... And then we will have loan redemptions. These are loans that we have already borrowed that are becoming due this year of about 1.5 billion. And we will have funding requirements for additional borrowings that we will need of about 14.1 billion. So this year our funding requirement is 14.1 billion. In next year our funding requirement will go to 15.6 billion and it will increase to 20.5 billion in 15-16. However, by year 7, we will have a negative funding requirement or a positive, I don't know how to say it in English, but we won't need to borrow. We'll have positive cash flows of about 7.1. Then at this point, we can decide what we're going to do with that money. Either the next CEO will announce another project, CAPEX project, and use that money, or go back as a dividend, or to go back. The labor unions are very clear when we consulted with them what they want to do with that money. So. And then, Chair, the sources of funding, where we will get the money, we will get the bulk of our money from the domestic capital markets, commercial paper, and domestic bonds. Will be the bulk of where we fund, and then we will get money from foreign, from development finance institutions, export credit agencies, and the Global Medium Term Note Program, which is an international bond issue for which we have authority from the National Treasury to borrow. We have already established benchmarks in the Euro and in the US markets. We have Transnet issued bonds in the Euro market and in the dollar market. But if these sources of funding are not enough, we will consider a second issuance of the GMTN, increasing the GMTN program. We will consider private placements, which is approaching individual financial institutions and selling them Transnet bonds privately. Or we can do further funding with export credit agencies. We can go into the syndicated loan markets, asset-backed financing, and then issue in other markets like the yen market or the sukuk market, which is an emerging market. I think it's Islamic finance market in the Middle East, which is becoming very popular now in the financial market. So we don't think that there is a problem in the funding of the 86 billion. We think that this program is executable over the 7-year period. If you go on to the next slide, this is our planned infrastructure spend of 3 billion. This slide shows you the how we will execute the capital program. In 2015-16, we will invest 48 billion. This year, we'll do 31 billion. Last year, we did around 24 billion. We will announce the final audited figure with our financial statement. And in 2016-17, which is really, for me, the crunch year, we will try to do CAPEX investment of about 56 billion in 1 year. I think this is unprecedented, certainly at Transnet. The importance of this CAPEX program is that in the previous 5-year corporate plan, 67% of our CAPEX program was going towards maintenance, and only 37% was going towards expansion. But with the 300 billion, we are able to cover all the maintenance backlog and continue current maintenance and have 58% of the money going towards new expansion. And new expansion is new rail, new locomotives, because our locomotives are old. They were bought in the 60s and the 70s. We haven't laid down a new rail in a very long time, I think in about 40 years or so. And so we need, if we're going to move, make a decisive move from road to rail, we have to bring in better equipment and modern equipment that will be able to allow us to provide a professional service. The majority of the investment will be in general freight and in freight rail. General freight business, which is agriculture, other ferrous minerals, and automotive, and so on, we will invest about 151 billion in general freight business. Containers as well are in general freight business. Export coal, about 32 billion, 25 billion in export iron ore line. Mr. Gama will talk about this later. And then in break bulk and bulk and other. So 201 billion will go into the Transnet Freight Rail Division. 47 billion will go into the National Port Authority and the Port Terminals, Rail Engineering, and TPL will get the other money. What is significant about this slide, Chair, is the small green slice here of 4 billion. That 4 billion goes into Transnet Rail Engineering, and it is for mainly R&D, research and development. So what is happening now is that we have bought 140 locomotives from General Electric. At this point, 62% of the locomotives are being built with local content, and 100% of the locomotives that are still on order are being built here in South Africa at our Transnet Rail Engineering facility in Pretoria, outside Goedespoort. So the 4 billion will go into research and development because we want to eventually, as Transnet Rail Engineering, or in fact as Transnet Engineering, because we think that our engineering division must do research and development also into port equipment and equipment that is required at our ports. That that money must go into researching new products and new equipment that we can sell and become an original equipment manufacturer ourselves. I think we are on track in our research for a new made in Africa locomotive, 100% made in Africa, made in South Africa, in fact, that we will call the Africa locomotive, that we hope to interest countries on the rest of the continent to buy and revitalize their railways with. We also manufacture wagons, and there will be research into wagons, and we're increasingly getting into the maintenance of cranes and port equipment, and researching how these can be done better with new and modern equipment, so that we are not just spending the money, but we're also researching new ways of doing things. Chair, this slide covers the major areas of capital investment and capacity creation. Freight rail coal line, ore line, and the different amounts that will be spent there. It shows you what the existing capacity is, the capacity that will be created over 7 years, and what the future capacity will be, and what we think the capacity utilization will be in 2019. And so we think that by 2019, we will utilize the 100% capacity that will be created of 97.5 million tons. And 2019 will have 82.5 million tons of iron ore being utilized. It is quite important to know, Chair, because there's been a debate about iron ore and manganese. Some people have argued that why don't we take the manganese from Sishen to Saldanha. We have decided to take the manganese from Sishen to the port of Moha, where we will build a new manganese terminal, strengthen the rail line from Sishen to Port Elizabeth so that it can accommodate heavy haul trains that will transport manganese. This will be the line will be then upgraded to a 26 axle load line. But this allows us to have the Sishen-Saldanha line as a rail line, as a dedicated line. As you know, it is a single line, so it will be a dedicated line that will not be shared with manganese, and it is possible to do 82.5 million tons if the Sishen line is dedicated to iron ore only. And so we're quite confident that the iron ore industry is quite happy with this. It allows us to transport more manganese to Port Elizabeth, to the port of Moha, because if we allow the sharing of the line between manganese and iron ore, we will transport less of both commodities. So we'll have two dedicated lines, one for manganese, one for iron ore, and we'll export the maximum, or we will transport the maximum to the port. And so, Chair, the rest is self-explanatory there about what will be capacity utilization will be in 2019. Capital investment by region, they normally call it the Eastern Catchment Area, which is Richards Bay and Devon. Richards Bay, this refers to the entire, if you like, corridor. So the rail and port towards Richards Bay will be 49 billion. Devon to Johannesburg, about 38.5 billion. So this is both the port and the rail. And the South Corridor, which is East London, Wuhan, Port Elizabeth, both investments in port and rail, about 25.9 billion. That includes the new line from Sishen to Port Elizabeth for manganese. Not the new line, but the strengthening of the line to 26 axle load. And then the Saldanha Sishen line, 28.6 billion, and Johannesburg Cape Town, about 3.9 billion.
think Honorable Mhu must not be discouraged about Cape Town. It's already well developed.
Yeah, I have quite a question.
Afterwards, yeah. I was anticipating. And the contribution to direct and indirect jobs, you'll see that we've tried to calculate roughly how much jobs will be created in each of the provinces as a result of this CAPEX program. But you'll see that KwaZulu-Natal is the biggest beneficiary, largely because our biggest operations are in Durban and Richards Bay, the biggest port in Africa. It used to be the second biggest, but now I think it's the biggest, because the biggest was Tripoli, and they've since had a bit of a mishap. But now I think we are the biggest, if we were to calculate volumes now, is Durban, and Richards Bay for break bulk is the biggest in the entire Southern Hemisphere. We have the biggest coal terminal in the world, or in Africa
and the Middle East.
In Africa and the Middle East. So the bulk of the jobs will be created in KwaZulu-Natal, but you see that around 15, 16, the Eastern Cape actually quite improves, and that comes with the new manganese terminal in the port of Mbuha. The market demand strategy will create jobs. We will create employment for 588,000 people. I must qualify this. The current people that we're employing, if you look at the first bar, 59,000 at Transnet, 145,000 at the indirect jobs. So the people that deal with Transnet, the suppliers and customers and so on, and then 164 are economy-wide jobs. So at the moment, our impact in the job market as Transnet is about 368,000 jobs. This will increase to 588 by 16-17 at the height of the MDS. And the additional jobs that will be created is 220,000. I think in the past this was published as if we're going to create 588,000 new jobs. But it is job opportunities in 16-17 in the economy as a result of our activity in the economy will be 588. And that will be current plus new jobs. The new jobs will be about 220,000. We will increase our intakes in our schools of excellence in rail, in ports, in pipelines. We will spend 4.6 billion on bursaries and grants, 7 billion on training in total. 317 technicians will be in training by 2018-19. We'll set up recruitment in critical skills and expand annual intakes. And we will have at all times at Transnet for the 7 years, 2,000 apprentices at all times. Those who remember Transnet in the yesteryears, Transnet was actually a producer of apprentices. In electrical apprentices and in all sorts of areas of engineering. So we would like to restore Transnet as a major contributor to apprentice training, welders, fitters, tenors, electricians, and so on. And we'll increase our engineering bursaries to 543 students by 2018-19. This is how the group employees will increase over the 7 years. Transnet group from 59,000 to 74,000. We will invest about 4.6% of our wage bill on skills development initiatives for our existing employees. These are the number of different trainees that we will take in over the next 7 years, engineering bursars, technicians, apprenticeships, management leadership program. This is our own middle management, senior management, and we will take in 47 chartered accountants on the program. What do they call it now? The chartered accountant, but there's a fancy name for it. Okay. The top program, yes, on the top program, yes. What is it now? Oh, now, sorry, now it's the Chartered Accountant Training Program. It used to be called the top program when I was much younger. The market demand strategy will promote localization, transformation, and empowerment. We will endeavor to have about 52% of our expenditure localized. We have already achieved up to 62% localization on the one deal of the 140 locomotives, and we are going to try and push this locomotive localization envelope as far as we can. But 52% is what we are going to endeavor to achieve. So we will require international suppliers to transfer knowledge, to do on-the-job training, to provide jobs and procurement opportunities, especially in rural areas where a lot of our facilities are located. We will assist, and the assistance will be provided to small businesses to foster innovation and create jobs, and plus minus 4.2 billion will be spent over the next 7 years on small business promotion. We will also collaborate with suppliers to meet government transformation and empowerment objectives. Chair, in the next slides, we're just going into some detail on the mega project, and I'm going to ask Mr. Daumure, the Chief Executive of the National Port Authority, to take us through the major port project.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Transnet has acquired the old Durban International Airport site from AXA, and the land is mainly needed in order to develop a deep water port with an annual capacity of 9.6 million TEUs, which will be provided in four phases, each phase bringing in a capacity of 2.4 million TEUs. It should be noted that the corporate plan of Transnet does not provide for the building design of the terminals, except for the acquisition of the land. And the funding will be provided through a PSP model. In the next slide, the activities within the current Pier 1 and Salisbury Island are detailed. And what is happening in Durban currently is that the berths are being deepened, and the base of the stacking or the top of the quay walls are being strengthened to accommodate heavier cranes. What has happened is that investment has been made in terminal handling equipment, dredging to a depth of 16 meters is currently underway. Transnet has also been in discussion with the Navy in terms of the acquisition of Salisbury Island, so that the Pier 1 terminal could be expanded to create an additional 1.1 million TEUs. In Cape Town, in the next slide, the Cape Town container expansion program is well underway. And the idea is to expand the capacity from 700,000 to 900,000 TEUs, and eventually to 1.4 million TEUs. And it's a combination of acquiring additional terminal equipment and refurbishing the berths, deepening the berths again to 16 meters and so forth. In the next slide, in the port of Ngqura, which is the newest in the ports within the Transnet stable, a number of things will be happening. We just finished expanding the terminal to a four berth container terminal, creating a capacity of around 800 million TEUs. With the additional stacking space, we should be able 800,000 TEUs, but with the additional stacking space, we should be able to get the capacity up to 2 million TEUs. A number of state-of-the-art container handling equipment have been purchased, cranes that can handle more than two containers at a time.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Mora, Honorable Chairperson, members. Just to continue on the next slide, we talk about the iron ore export corridor. As Mr. Mlife has indicated, that's a corridor where we rail iron ore from Sishen to the port of Saldanha. We believe that there will be an increase in the demand for this particular commodity beyond 82 to 83 million tons. We'll expand that from the current 60 million tons to that number of 83 to take into account the current miners, which is Kumba and Afmang, but also there's four or five emerging miners that will be coming on stream over the next 7 years. Some of them are already mining there, and that will create a lot of jobs in the Northern Cape, but also in the port and the rail space. The projects entail new loops in the rail track, power upgrades, new wagons, as well as tipplers and port handling infrastructure. If you go to the next slide, on the export coal, there is a project to... Is it too far? There is a project to ramp up to 81 million tons per annum. Basically, that project will upgrade the current rail network to 26 tons per axle all over the to the north of MLO into the coal mine, into the coal mines themselves, but also to standardize the fleet to jumbo wagons and install ECP braking systems, as well as make sure that we upgrade the traction power so that we can supply both the AC and DC sections of the network. We will then, after that, ramp up to some 97 million tons beyond the current 81 million tons, but that will be contingent on the coal exporting parties and junior miners signing take-or-pay contracts with us so that we are able to commit to those investments. The investments in coal include both the infrastructure network as well as the running stock components. In terms of the investment program, we also have a investment program in terms of locomotives, running stock. We are in the process of finalizing the acquisition of 110 19E dual voltage, which is AC and DC locomotives for the coal line. To date, 98 locomotives have been delivered. There's an additional 12 locomotives which are still to be delivered. They are in various stages of testing and commissioning. We will also be acquiring some 32 class 15E very heavy-duty locomotives for the iron ore line. That is assisting us in terms of the ramp-up. This year we expect to approach the 60 million tons mark in terms of iron ore. On the general freight business, we have already taken delivery of 39 of the first 100 locomotives from General Electric. They're currently churning out 6 locomotives per month. We want to improve and increase that to 8 locomotives per month. We will then, after that, move into the 43 diesels. And we're also, we've got a tender out, in fact, that is closed for an additional 95 electric locomotives. With the 143 are, in fact, diesel locomotives. If we move to the next slide, in terms of rolling stock acquisition, we've indicated that over the next 7 years, we want to more than double general freight from the current 80 million tons to 170 million tons. In order for us to facilitate this growth, we will have to make telling investments in terms of wagons, locomotives, as well as infrastructure. So over the next 7 years, we will be acquiring a total of 1,317 new locomotives, which is a combination of diesel as well as electric locomotives. The vast majority of these 1,317 locomotives, in fact some 1,200 odd, will be for the general freight business. We will build in this country 25,000 new wagons as part of the fleet upgrade. The wagons will be used for automotive. They will, some of them will be used for specific mineral mining, especially in the granite, chrome, as well as magnetite sort of industries. And then there'll also be flatbed wagons for containers. If you move to the next slide, we will be expanding the manganese channel from Hotazel down to the port of Muha. From the current 5.5 million tons capacity to 16 million tons in the next 7 year period. You will know that our country, South Africa, has got 80% of the world's best manganese reserves in the Northern Cape. And we want to catapult our mining industry to be at the top echelon. In terms of mining this particular commodity and become number one in that particular supply chain. So this investment that we will make will assist a lot of existing mines, miners as well as new miners in terms of that particular idea. We will upgrade the rail network to heavy haul standards so that we can run 200 wagon trains. We currently run 105 wagon trains between Port Elizabeth and Hotazel, that will move to 200. We will also double the 232-kilometer section between Kimberley and DR, and also construct additional loops between Hotazel and Port Elizabeth or Muha in order for us to be able to run 200 wagon trains. And then also construct a terminal at the port of Muha with 2 key walls, which will assist us in terms of being able to move 16 million tons and beyond to move, going forward. The next slide talks to what we call the Swaziland Rail Link, which is a proposed link between Lausanne and the Swaziland network linking back into Richards Bay via Swaziland, and we will use that as an alternative route from Emelo to the East Coast, and largely to carry general freight, so that we can free up the coal line to carry additional coal to the port of Richards Bay between Emelo and Richards Bay. So we believe that that new line will probably divert some 22 million tons of cargo of general freight cargo from the existing coal line, and then free up additional capacity so that we're able to move 97 million tons and beyond. This is a very strategic investment in the region. in terms of supporting the interconnectedness of our rail lines within the SADC region, and it involves three countries. It's South Africa and Swaziland, and then also from the Swaziland side into Mozambique. And it will assist us in terms of freeing up that corridor. The scope is to construct a new 146-kilometer line from Lausanne to Stovoto inside Swaziland, and then New Year's in South Africa at Davel, as well as upgrading the existing lines between Stovoto and Kolela, and then also upgrading the line between Kolela and Richards Bay. The next slide talks to the Waterberg coal line, which has 40% of South Africa's remaining coal reserves, and therefore is regarded as the next strategic growth node for the coal sector moving from Mpumalanga area. Infrastructure such as the availability of water, as well as the logistics via rail is considered to be very, very important in order for us to unlock the potential of that particular area. Initially, we will run some 23 million tons there. Eskom, in terms of domestic consumption, is entering into long-term contracts with mining companies to assist it to move coal from the waterberg into the middle of the country, where they have the majority of their power stations in Mpumalanga. It entails some 500-kilometer new line that will go from the waterberg to Ohis, 26-ton axle line to handle coal, and we are in the verge of finalizing that particular feasibility study so that we can have that particular line. If we move to the next slide, Eskom also has particular needs in terms of moving a lot of their coal requirements from road to rail, and we believe that over the next 7 years we will move from 7 million tons transported by rail in 2012 to 30 million tons. Through that migration project is a whole range of projects moving coal into various power stations belonging to Eskom, largely in the Mpumalanga area and parts of Gauteng. There's investments in terms of rolling stock and infrastructure that would be required in terms of being able to do that, but we think also it's an important aspect in terms of the conversion from road to rail and freeing up our roads so that our roads can basically run with passengers instead of heavy trucks which damage the roads, but also have got not so good fuel emissions coming from them. The next slide I will ask my colleague Tau Moro to talk about the Richards Bay expansion.
Thanks, yeah. Honorable Chair, the slide deals with a study that was undertaken by Transnet, essentially in turning the port of Richards Bay into a world-class bulk terminal. The port is projected to experience quite a significant growth in volumes around a number of commodities such as magnetite, ferrochrome, coking coal, and so forth. And the scope looks at not only the equipment such as ship loaders and unloaders, but upgrading the belting system, expanding current storage areas, refurbishing existing equipment, and redesigning the Bayview Yard, and also ensuring that the adequate truck staging facilities and mobile cranes in the port. Additional berthing capacity will also be added in both the multipurpose and the dry bulk terminal. The next slide deals with a number of projects around the ports of East London, Nuha, Port Elizabeth, and in Saldanha. In the port of Port Elizabeth, there will be provision for an additional car terminal, and there will be an extension of the main breakwater and deepening of the entrance channel at the port of East London. In the Nuha terminal, as I indicated earlier on, we now have a four berth container terminal, so the expansion is already way underway. In the port of Nuha, we're looking at developing liquefied natural gas terminal and breakwater. Talking about clean energy, this could be utilized for the production of electricity within the port precinct. Again, in the port of Nuha, we anticipate that we will be going up the river, the Kuha River, by constructing quays and providing additional services. I think most of the investments here would be taking place towards the end of the 7-year period. In the port of Saldanha, we have just concluded, or are in the process of concluding, lease agreement for the construction of a liquefied petroleum gas and terminal storage, and then looking at providing other facilities and services dedicated to the oil and gas industry. I think I'll give over to the GC to look at the new multi-product pipeline.
Chair, just to add on the presentation that Mr. Gama made on Eskom coal, we have already contracted with Eskom for this year for the 12 million tons, so which is we've just signed an agreement earlier this financial year to do 12 million tons, so that for us the 12 million tons for this year is already guaranteed, so there will be a jump to 5 million tons. The multi-project pipeline is well known, which is the transportation of liquid fuels from Durban to Johannesburg. We started the project a couple of years ago, and we've built a new 555-kilometer, 24-inch diameter trunk line from Durban to Gauteng, and it addresses the increased demand for fuel in the heartland of South Africa's economic region. The 24-inch Durban to Jameson pipe Park pipeline was successfully commissioned in 2012, and we have already transported about 348 million liters of diesel since commissioning to the 31st of March 2012. Three 16-inch pipelines in the Northern Network have been commissioned during the first quarter of 2011 and 12 and are performing well, and we have already transported about 1.2 billion liters of product. Pump stations, the testing of pump stations 1 and 3 has been completed, and we will be commissioning them soon. These pump stations help us to increase the pressure in the pipeline and are located in different areas between Johannesburg and Durban. The terminals, Terminal 1 is complete. Diesel and petrol components of Terminal 2 construction have been completed. Terminal 1 has achieved the safety milestone of 660,000 LTI 3 hours, which is 660,000 without any incident. The overall completion of the NMPP is on schedule for December 2013. The cost is, as is approved at the moment, at about 23 billion. Which is significantly higher than the original amount that was planned, but we are on schedule to complete it in terms of the new budget. But The expenditure on the pipeline was not in vain, because we have benefit of the pipeline. We have learned a lot of lessons. We are writing up a case study on how not to do a pipeline. And in fact, other countries are already coming to us to come and learn from our mistakes. So there is a positive story that is coming out of the pipeline. I think that we will become, with the school fees that we have paid on the pipeline, one of the world's best pipeline project managers in the world if we learn from it. Chair, there is a slide that is not here, which is, what are the risks to the execution of this program? And the major risks are, of course, macroeconomic, exogenous risks. The impact of what is happening in Europe on the South African economy, on the neighboring economies, is a major risk. It will perhaps result in us, because if there is an impact in the commodities markets, if there is less demand, we will transport less volumes, and we will not be able to generate the 200 billion that is required to invest in the capital expenditure program. We will have to moderate our expectations if that happens. But we will see it when it does happen. So there is a likelihood that this program may be revised going forward, depending on how the markets turn out, both for capital as well as the general macroeconomic conditions. Regulatory risks: if there is a decision to split our assets in a particular fashion by regulation, this changes our balance sheet significantly. And this changes our balance sheet significantly, and it can result in the gearing changing, and the calculations for gearing, because you have to calculate asset base. It may result in a default with our existing borrowers, our existing lenders that lend us money, and may have to cause us to change this program. The endogenous risks are around our ability to build the operations center of excellence in rail and ports, our ability to implement the scheduled rail and implement the revised fleet plan and improved network. If we are not able to do any of those, it puts the whole program at risk, and we need to put in place continuous improvement teams to capture operational efficiencies. Those are the risk mitigants. We are going to have to restructure freight rail into a customer-focused business units that will drive accountability. We are already setting up a special business unit to deal with agriculture, for example, in the rural areas. And so, we have to secure the volumes and customer satisfaction to ensure that we can generate the funds that are required to be generated internally to execute the program. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for this detailed presentation. I think we now have a clear understanding of what's happening, or what will be happening, with where the money will be coming from, how long will the whole project take, and so forth. Would want to commend you, actually. I'm quite impressed with the fact that you are going to be starting with the existing infrastructure by maintaining the existing infrastructure before you come up with new infrastructure. That's actually what impresses me. And the fact that you've really managed to identify risks going forward, and also coming up with the mitigating factors. You know, sometimes this becomes a challenge when our SOE deal with their, or agencies deal with their business. And this shows that you are really on the ground and know what you're doing. and that's quite to me. I don't know about other members, as they will be engaging with their presentation. To me, that serves as a very important issue and quite impressive. Very making me very confident that we are going to get what we are promised here. Members, here is a very detailed but quite technical also presentation. I know as members you will like I heard while during the presentation quite grappled with few of the acronyms. I know some of them are being explained here, but some of them are just, you know, because when you're working on something, then you take it for granted that everybody understands. We understand that, but I know that members have jotted down those areas that they do not understand, and this is the opportunity now to engage. I've deliberately opened up your time, but I'm going to limit your response time, unfortunately, because this presentation is quite long, a 3 billion presentation, or within an hour or so and a half, is, we understand. That's why we opened it up. I'll start with Babu Gwabaza, you're welcome. Babu Mabasa, Mr. Hussein, Babu Ntuli, and Mr. Mobu and Babu Ntuli. Methodist will be the last. In that order, please.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Let me start off. You know, that's why I'm taking a deep breath, Chairperson. It's a very big operation, this one. Let me start by saying once more, and I'm going to say this again and again and again, that the success of this massive infrastructure program, 300 billion rand, located just at one entity of government, is going to be measured by the extent to which, by the time we reach this fifth year and the seventh year, we shall have been able to bring into economic activity not just as workers but as not just as wage earners but as wealth makers too, through SMMEs and cooperatives, the black majority of this country. I want to first make that statement. And in this instance, I want to appeal to your hearts, because your minds have already been appealed to. I say this because the heart keeps all good and bad things. You see, families are kept together because of the nice things that are kept in the heart. But also people fight because they keep grudges in their heart forever. So that's why I want to appeal to your heart in this particular matter. It cannot be that by year seven, we shall not be able to count in real terms sustainable and growing owned companies, SMMEs, and black owned cooperatives. It cannot be that at the end of this program, we shall not have failed. We shall have failed to say to ourselves, indeed, the black majority is part of the economic mainstream of this country. And I'm saying this only to this entity, Transnet. I will say it to all of them. And I'm sure all members here are saying the same thing. So, Chair, that's where I want to start. I'm.
Please be mindful of the time.
Yes. Yes, Chairperson. I just want to go to slide 10. I want to leave the others. No, to slide 8 first. And that slide 8 is reflected in that slide is reflected in subsequent slides as well. Where you are talking about the transportation of these commodities, I hope that in facilitating all this transportation of commodities, the philosophy that drives you is one of also facilitating beneficiation, not a philosophy which says dig out and ship out. Because we shall not have achieved what is in the Industrial Policy Action Plan and what is in the New Growth Path if our thinking is dig out and ship out. And it's not attached to beneficiation. Slide 10 talks to recruitment. I want to understand how are you focusing your recruitment. My simple thinking would tell me that the focus should target the black and rural high school students, women and the disabled persons in particular, so that these skills really make sense to those who have been disadvantaged in the past. On slide 12, you are talking about, you are referring to international suppliers, but there is not much being said about the local big construction companies. And in particular, the role that these local big traditional construction companies are going to play to subcontract the black emerging companies. On slide 20, you're talking about manufacturing locomotives or referring to locomotives. And I will be short here, Chairperson, and end here. I just want to understand where are we manufacturing these locomotives? Because it is critical that we intensify local manufacturing. And Chair, if we are manufacturing locally, let me ask if this committee, through your leadership, can visit this manufacturing. Not because I don't trust the presentation, simply because we just want to boast and say we are now manufacturing locally, we are not importing locomotives. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. I hope we'll be the first one to be invited, apart from the DPE committee, actually. Thank you, Bafo. The next one is.
Thank you very much, Conrad Chair. Now, following on what Duwab Gwabaza has said, I want to express appreciation at the input that has been made. We really appreciate But then the challenges that we foresee, some of them are informed by the experiences that we have had as we play oversight over other committees, you know, broadly. Let me start with the skills, because it is possible that we may wish that jobs will be created in the country, beneficiation will be done in the country, the raw material will be converted into usable, should I say, goods, you know, in the country. But if we don't have the skills to do that, we may find that under time pressure, especially if we look at the 2010 World Cup program, where most of the things we had to import. So what measures is being taken to ensure that in parallel with our ambitions, the appropriate skills are also growing? And here I'm also referring to a relationship with departments like science and technology, higher education, so that to what degree do they match with you in step? Because once there is a disorientation there, then you know we are in trouble. Because once desperation comes in, then we may have to resort to what we would not have wanted to do, like importing what we could have avoided to import. But it also means the education and technical areas should also relate such that they understand you, you know, so that they also produce the appropriate students for your needs. So it means that symbiotic relationship is critical. My next point is the entrepreneurs that must be born out of this system. It's quite possible. I was having a workshop in Soweto yesterday, and we were appalled to realize that black people are forming a very minute fraction in manufacturing. So, and when I say black, I mean in its broadest sense, Africans, Indians, and colors. So if we are not careful, we may find that there is no change in that. If we get the potential manufacturers and we ask them, are you involved in manufacturing? We may find that most of them could be involved in fronting, you know, all those bad tendencies that we, I think, both of us are aware of. So it means even at the planning stage, we must take proactive steps to say, how do we avoid such? One but last is, it's very easy, because one of the challenges that we face, as the president articulates most of the time, it's very easy to find that we are enriching those that are already rich, either historically, you know, by virtue of where we come from, or if we come to the present, to find that it's very, very few people that benefit from this investment. And that's why Comrade Gwabaza is also speaking of cooperatives. In other words, he is also saying, what measures do we have to make sure that the benefits of these exercises spread to many? It's very easy that they can enrich, you know, very few people in a vertical manner. Let me end with saying, even with sub construction, we should also open our eyes widely to make sure that the subcontracted are not exploited by those that will be at higher positions to subcontract. It does happen even in building constructions where you find that the very black that we seek to advance, because they are coming in as subcontractors, they also become exploited in the process. Thanks, Colleague Chair.
Thanks, Dr. Mavasa. Next one is
Chair, thank you very much. I want to make, and I promise I will try and be as brief as possible, to make two or three quick comments and maybe just raise two questions, Chair. The one is to say that I think that we will all agree that this has been a long time coming, and it will be a step in the right direction to be able to address some of the infrastructure backlogs that the country has overall. So I think generally it's fairly positive in that we're able to make a massive investment in developing our infrastructure to be able to contribute towards longer-term growth in the country, and that's something that I think that will bind all of us, and I myself am fully in support of it. Chair, I think what we will also agree is that it's not the amount of investment that we make in the input. What for us is more important is the outputs that come out of that and how it actually benefits the very people that we are trying to change their lives. And the last two speakers before me in a way touched on exactly that. My job, for example, is not to be worried about rolling stock, but to worry about how people's lives change. And that's what this thing must translate to in the end, and that's where my interest in as a public representative is. And in talking to that, Chair, for me the big issue is, and I would really like to hear from Transnet, what systems that you're going to put into place to make sure that the ordinary South African benefits from this massive infrastructure development. And in particular focus, my concern is, how do you keep the politically connected vultures out of this program, and to make sure that the ordinary South Africans on the ground actually benefit from the scheme, and that you're making a massive investment in our people rather than a select few. To expand on that, Chair, I want to take you then to page 12 of your document. And you must maybe just help me and clear up this. I'm not sure whether the bullet point you talk about, where it says 4.2 billion expected to be spent over the next 7 years in small business promotion, is that overall out of the 300 billion? Because that then translates to just over 1% of your infrastructure build program of 300 billion that's actually being targeted towards small business development or small business promotion. If you just expand on what promotion means. It's not actually development. I'm not sure if it is, but if you would please help me on that. I think, Chair, that we should have been seeing a much greater investment in small business development. I mean, if you compare the last study that I looked at on the number of small businesses in South Africa to Brazil, for example, we've got some 2.4 or 3 million, and Brazil has got some 16 million small business development. So when we looked at these massive investments that we're making in infrastructure, I would like to see, Chair, that we make a greater investment in the development of smaller businesses, new and emerging young entrepreneurs who have the opportunity to be able to pull themselves out of this cycle of poverty that they're stuck in. And this is an opportunity that we can use to target those specific individuals to change their lives and have an impact for the future. The second point, and my last question, Chair, is... you talked about the issue of the risks, and I would understand that that this build program has been done on the basis of some study in terms of market demand, and I'm sure you would have done something, some sort of study. And you made a very important point towards the end where you talked about the external factors that actually will be of great risk to the success of the project over a 7-year period. The question I want to ask is that, having considered that, do you have a plan B in the event you get to the stage that the external factors are impacting on the infrastructure program? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I also just want to say thank you very much for the for this wonderful presentation, very informative. I think many of us do not know exactly what this entailed, and I hope that we can also have an opportunity to educate the South African population about just what this ambitious program is all about, because I think there's very little knowledge of what this is all about. GCE, you answered already my question I was going to ask about the Port of Cape Town and why so little spent or is being spent on it, because, as you said, it's already well developed compared to the others. Thank you very much for that. I'm not going to dwell on that. But I'm going to ask you a question about this kind of mega project and the capacity, the human capacity that's required, and the also the investment that has to go into that. Just how ready is Transnet? Because I would imagine that this could require a concerted HR development program to be able to meet this kind of project. But also, what comes to my mind is the issue of the requirements for power requirements to generate this kind of work. How closely are you working with ESCOM to ensure that your projects are not going to suffer from lack of power to proceed? The other point I'd like to raise, and you mentioned, GCE, that you are developing links between Mozambique, South Africa, and, of course, Swaziland. But I would imagine that much of the capacity, particularly for rail capacity, freight particularly, will involve the regional countries, Zimbabwe, Zambia, Namibia, and so on and so forth. To what extent is the regional integration part of this program? Because, I mean, if you have capacity here and you don't have capacity in other countries, then it's useless to trade with countries that don't have the capacity to handle some of the freight that comes out of here from our ports. The other point I wanted to find out is there's been this talk about the Karoo gas and how much this is going to it might change the economic profile of this country if it should come into stream. To what extent is Transnet ready if this ever takes off ground? But there's also the element of environmental impact with this kind of project. Obviously, there's going to be some very serious impact on the environment and some of the projects that you are going to be undertaking. To what extent has this been addressed to mitigate for the issue of environmental impact? My colleague has talked about the issue of corruption, and I think this is very serious. Of course, in projects of this nature, magnitude, there's usually this kind of fear that we might just run into problems of, you know, underhand practices and actions. So I'd like to emphasize that maybe you can underline just what you've done to avoid this. Lastly, you mentioned, GCE, that you made mistakes in the pipeline project. Can you just indicate to what extent was this and what was involved in terms of runs and cents? Thanks.
Thanks, Abdullah.
Thank you, Chairperson, and I would also like to welcome the presentation. Chairperson, firstly, I would like to find out I've seen that it's about 98 million tons of coal which will be moved. I want to check that against the global warming, as we know that we were saying that the coal we are doing away. Now I can see you are increasing the usage of coal. Just to check, how do you balance that moving going forward.
I have seen that you are talking about MDS, market demand strategy. I mean, to check against this global warming and the carbon emission, or whether you've got any strategy for what do we call it? It's where we say if you are emitting coal, you'll be able to pay something to compensate for that, whether there's any such. They call it carbon pricing. So, yeah, something like that. I wanted to check that. And when we were with the higher education department, when they present to us, they promise us that there is a new way of doing things. They've sent all the SOEs or entities, there will be a budget for skills development, not particularly for the department, but there will be money set aside for skills, for any skills, for those people who have graduated, who are sitting at home. I want to check whether you've got that fund or something new. To check this, how much skills will be imported? I think that it has been asked, but on the other way, how much skills will be imported from outside when we are dealing with this project? Lastly, Chairperson, I'm not sure whether we'll be able to quantify the number of SMEs who will benefit. I'm saying this because if you look at the World Cup, 2010 World Cup, we use a huge amount of money and we could see the results. But when it comes to the beneficiation of to the people who benefited, certainly most of the things were imported, the skills and components which were building the stadiums. I want to check that one. I know that about the locomotives will be built locally, but to check others whether, as I'm saying, is it possible to quantify? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you,
Mr.
Chair.
Members of this committee, Tinkala, they belong to the same pool of thought, but not politically, but for progress, you know. Really think alike, yeah. On transformation initiative, we reached a collaboration with suppliers to meet government's transformation and empowerment objective. One wonders if there was engagement with ordinary laborers. You know, before 1994, the economy of this country was in shambles, and people who contributed, you know, to that are ordinary laborers. And for me, as an older laborer, when you talk about 300 billion, the first thing I think of is, increasing my wage and also some opportunities, you know, within the context of basic conditions of employment. And localization initiatives as well, if we could be provided with a list of those stakeholders so that we are able to do oversight and measure progress. And also on job creation, ourselves as a public representative, this is really good news for us. But on the other hand, we are also worried about tendencies in the country of employing, you know, cheap labor, people who are not South Africans, not for us to discriminate on them, but for us to do what is, you know, which will benefit the country at the end of the day without discriminating against them. And we do all this, you know, in the name of cutting costs. And in every organization, when you talk about cost effectiveness, the first thing you do is to cut on costs. and the person who is served in the day are ordinary laborers. From the newspapers and other information, you know, from other documents, we see how all this, you know, opportunity benefits the oath of companies. And we think that Transnet will do something different. I think if you had when Mr. Kwabasa started talking here, he became sort of emotional and it touched us as well, because we talk about things that we see every day when we do oversight. And, you know, a project of this magnitude cannot go without risk. And, Mr. Mulepe, I think you are proactive to talk about those risks, but you also have them internal risks. We think those are small things that don't matter. But ordinary laborers are the people who can bring the company down to issues. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry, Chair. The last point on transfer of skills. I don't know to what extent can we, you know, be certain that there will be qualitative transfer of skills, because for multinationals, lack of skills to us is to their advantage. So one is not sure as to, you know, the quality of skills that will be transferred to those people who will be, you know, potential recipients of the skills.
Thanks, Ms. Otetse. Those are the questions from members. May I just add to you? I know that I have commended you for putting more efforts into maintaining the current infrastructure. And I can see that you've dedicated your outer years towards the actual expansion. So I just want to understand what in practical this means. You said 67% of your actual capital spend would be towards maintenance, and your 37% in the first 5 years will be towards the expansion. What? So the 7 years is the 42.58. Okay, so the 42%, 58, it means, because I can see that on your sixth year, that's when you increase your spending. What does that actually mean in practice? I would want to understand, looking at this 42-58 split that you have put for yourself. And of course, looking at that also, the issues that were raised by members here on the state of readiness in terms of your human capital, and also whether you would have managed to raise such amounts. When I look at your chart, your year-on-year spending, it shows that you'll only manage to increase your spending towards the sixth year. And I just want to understand that. Why I'm saying this is because we want to be sure that this is actually going to be implementable or not. The human capital issues, I think they were raised, though. What I wanted to understand is that you're going to be producing 2,000 apprentices at all times. What does that mean in throughout the 7 years? What does that actually mean? If you were to break it, perhaps, so that we are much more clearer annually, so that we can have a clear picture of what you're talking about. Where will these people be trained? Are we going to be utilizing the existing institutions? Are you going to use, for instance, you have an in-house institute of training, or you're going to be utilizing even the African space that is there? We know that for some of the Asian countries to develop to where they are today, they had to invest a lot on their human capital. For instance, we know that some of them are able to produce more than 200,000 per annum in terms of artisans and so forth. Are we going to be able to do that? This question was asked, I'm just emphasizing on it. Are we going to be able to have such a personnel to be able to assist us with this great and very what ambitious the project that we have, which is very correct. I think it's coming at the right time. I just want to understand the current figures, because you are saying you're going to increase engineer bursaries intake to 543 students in 2018. What is the current figure there, so that and whether this is only coming from you, and then when you combine with outside, or maybe let me ask like this: what is your demand, for instance, in as far as this is concerned, for you to be able to take up such a project? Well, on I think colleagues have really spoken a lot on the issues around the small business development and promotion in this regard, especially that you'll be using international suppliers contracts. You see, normally we are told that there will be that transfer of skills, but how do you measure that afterwards? Because some of the projects are quite short-term, and most of them are temporary people who are employed by those international contractors. Some are subcontracted, but at the end of the day, they get much more poorer. We've seen with the 2010, the preparations towards 2010. I think I'm also interested to get from, just to add on what my colleagues have asked already, to get a clear indication of how are you going to avert some of the challenges that we had during 2010, so that we don't repeat them, especially in this big project. We've heard that there are lots of collusions, especially in some of people use this opportunities to do certain crazy things, actually, if I were to say. Are you working together, for instance? Are you going to be utilizing the services also of, or using the data from competition authorities so that you are able then to not repeat what we see having been done during 2010, especially within the build industry? The issue around the local beneficiation that was asked, I won't repeat it. You know, the electronic or the electric locomotives, you normally get disturbances of especially with regards to this electric locomotives, especially during rainy season, so during winter time like now, where you have power cuts and then the delays and that certain sort of things. How will you then ensure that this is not happening going forward? Because this is a practice. I know most of the time you'll hear people saying we couldn't do 1, 2, 3 because the trains could not move, or we could not, for instance, take certain goods from one place to the other because of that because of power stoppages. There was Moloto Corridor. I don't know how is this water back coal opportunity, especially in terms of the freight issues, going to ensure that it benefits also the people around that. Because I know there was a train or rail infrastructure planned. If you have any information around that, whether is there anything that is going to, is it an extension or is it just something new, and what will happen to that plan that was there? Because I know that a feasibility study, including also the economic impact assessment, was done around that area. Just want to know whether you will be utilizing some of the information, especially coming from the waterbed area, so forth, just to assist not only the mining, but also the farmers around that area in terms of transporting their goods. When we were around Limpopo, we were told that they are holding, for instance, their stock from Limpopo to Gauteng, and then Mpumalanga also is doing the same thing. And when we look at how this could be benefiting, for instance, if you put up that train or the rail or the cargo thing, it would have saved people from Mpumalanga. I think it was 4 years back or so. By then, it was more than 60 million rand per year. It would have saved them that because it cost them a lot to transport goods from those two provinces to Gauteng. We really appreciate this initiative, and we, I'm one of the people who feel that this will add very, very, very positive benefits towards our economy, not only in terms of growth of the economy, but also in terms of the development of our people. May I hand over to you then for responses? We are really beyond the time, if it can be 1 second. Yes.
Please talk to the integrated rail transport. I know that if you are talking about freight, but commuter transport as well, and PROPRO, that doesn't necessarily belong to you, but the talk between yourselves and PRASA?
Thank you. Mr. Molefe, may I hand over to you? Sorry, before you come in, I think we'll skip the tea time, and we will immediately after the responses, which I'm giving because I'm looking at our time, I'll give something like 15 minutes, Mr. Mdusha, unfortunately. And perhaps those that would not have responded to would request that perhaps you respond in writing so that we save, you know, our time. That's what we normally do when we run out of time. I'm doing so that we give the department also enough time to make their own presentation, and would like to really, really apologize for that. Over to you, Mr. Molefe.
Chair, yes, these are only 38 questions, but we'll do it. The facilitation of beneficiation, no dig out and ship out, was the first question. Matters of the heart were discussed, but we'll leave the matters of the heart today. You know, on matters of the heart, incidentally, we had an exco sort of heart-to-heart talk about this and what it means for us as individuals. And one of the things that we agreed to do is for all of us to listen to the small voices inside ourselves right through the program. be guided by those, because there won't be any one of us to say, don't do this, don't do that, but there will be a small voice. And hopefully we can have a collective small voice that drives us away from doing wrong and keeps us focused on what we need to do. And just to focus our executive team as well as the middle management, the message that we're putting through Transnet is that as a result of unemployment in South Africa, which is the biggest problem, there is a parent today, a father and a mother, that has to go and face his children and say there is no food, like there was no food yesterday because they couldn't get a job today. And that is the picture that we have in our minds, and that is the issue that we would like to deal with as part of this program. So the creation of jobs so that parents can have food for their children, so that children can go to school and be kept in school with the money that they earn from employment. So the rest is just frills. But that is what we hope will be able to drive Transnet employees to execute this program, listening to the little voice inside ourselves. So on the question of the recruitment of the people that we need, we will be going through a continuous recruitment drive. I don't know, Nogu, if you want to talk for half a minute on recruitment.
We'll be going through an intensive recruitment drive. In this year, we're concentrating on critical skills that we need in order to deliver in this year. But going forward, since we're spread across the country, we'll be going through the big recruitment drive. We also take into consideration the employment equity numbers that we have to fulfill in terms of blacks, in terms of women, as well in terms of people with disability. So as we go through that drive, we take those into consideration. We've gone through a step further in terms of people with disabilities, that each executive member in their own operating divisions, they have signed up on the percentage on their contribution towards recruiting people with disabilities.
Chair, on the visit to Transnet Rail Engineering, members are welcome. We will organize the visit, but I asked Martin to put up some pictures of Transnet Rail Engineering. That is a wagon. They are putting on two wheels that at Transnet Rail Engineering. Those are some of the employees dealing with the small machines at the bottom there, and the welding, some of the best welding in the country. This is a coach for PRASA, for passenger, that we are manufacturing ourselves at the Transnet Rail Engineering. And these are different welding works. I can't see what they're welding. It's a bogey. It's the underneath of our wagon. These two trains were manufactured by us. These are diesel locomotives. The only thing that is important in these trains is the traction motor and the engine. But the rest is from South Africa, put together in South Africa. I don't know if some of you know that we have a wheels manufacturing business where we manufacture the wheels of trains and we actually export them. So these are being put together. There is an entire production line. It is General Electric intellectual property, but we are putting it together in South Africa. The parts we are sourcing from local companies in South Africa, a lot of the parts are being sourced. Only the essential parts that we can't get engineered in South Africa are being imported from America. But we have the workforce to put together these trains here. The people were sent to the U.S. for training. They have trained other people. So this is done with our own local engineers, artisans, and welders. All the people that are involved. I may as well deal with this question of involvement in Southern Africa. The African Union has identified these different corridors as being critical, and these are mainly rail corridors. The Lobito-Benguela, the Central Corridor, the
Nyakala, the Trans-Caprivi, the Trans-Kalahari, which is from Johannesburg to Walvis Bay, and the Maputo Corridor, which is already existing. Our president in South Africa has been made responsible for the corridor from Devon to Dar es Salaam. It's called the Northern Corridor. And I think that the Department of Economic Development will know more about these corridors and what government is doing. But as South Africa, we are involved in the development of this network going forward. And this is an AU initiative. The importation of skills.
Importation of, we only import skills in areas, especially where we have bought special cranes and special equipment that we do not have skills to operate those. But we also manage the transfer of skills. But in can I just take it further and talk more on the skills on what we're doing? We, to answer specific questions, we do have schools within Transnet that we train and develop our internal staff, as well as we take more than we are going to require, and we train South Africans and then release them with the skills that they can go and find job outside the company of Transnet, those that we cannot use. And I will just take on a step further and answer your question. Mostly we advertise in the newspapers, and general public, they apply and they go through the process of getting on board into our training school. We have recently advertised for a cadet, rail cadet students to come on board. We are in a process of putting together a maritime school that will start the enrollment in the beginning of next year, but we do have current schools that we are utilizing. And in terms of the question on engineering, we had issued 60 bursaries to engineers, and from this year we have doubled that figure to 120, and then going forward for the next 7 years we'll increase it by 10%. That is just on engineers. And on technicians, it's 180, and we're increasing that from this year by 56% and 10% going forward, as well as in artisan, we're taking artisan 500, but we'll increase that from this year by 10% going forward. So we're doubling the numbers more than what we will require, so that we will have more to recruit, and other companies can have more to recruit from South Africans.
Entrepreneurs in manufacturing, we think that we actually need a much broader skills discussion in South Africa, because we need to prepare our learners, our students, to get ready for an economy that is industrializing, which is emphasis in mathematics and science, as well as emphasis on resources that we have hitherto not exploited fully. Two-thirds of South African land, or two-thirds of South African territory, is water. We don't have a notable school of maritime. In other countries, like the Netherlands, they train children in maritime from high school. Now, we can't even swim. And let alone trying to become a vessel, captain of a vessel, or working in a maritime industry in a vessel and so on. I think we need to have that change of mindset. We need to identify that this economy is industrializing, and that the skills from the education system must respond to the needs of the economy, and including in areas that are outside our comfort zone, like maritime. Maritime, I think, is going to become very big in South Africa because of its strategic location between the East and the West. We are not fully utilizing that location advantage that we have as South Africa. So it is a broader discussion that has to be had on skills. How do we change lives? I think I've spoken briefly about this. At the end of the day, what we would like to see is parents being able to give their children food and being able to afford an education for their children in South Africa.
How do we keep the political vultures out? I don't know that it's going to be... I don't know if we can... You know, in any... in any ecosystem, there are vultures, there are sheep, and people die, are eaten by vultures, and so on. I think they will always be there. I think that it is to wish them... Sorry? I don't know. I don't think I'm competent to answer this, but we will try and ensure that the execution of this program is done with the highest levels of integrity. Plan B. You know, we can develop Plan B, and I think we've got a few Plan Bs, and Plan C, and D, and E, and F. But the problem with planning is that planning may lead to paralysis. Eventually, when you plan, and you feel like, and you don't implement, you just plan. There have been hundreds and thousands of plans. The emphasis here is execution. And last week, we were having a discussion with some of our middle management, with Professor Nick Benadel of Gibbs, about this program and the implications for planning. And he was saying, you know, Napoleon was a great planner, but he also understood that as soon as the army goes into battle with their plans and the deployments that they have done, when the first shot is fired, the plans change. Because now they must respond to the material conditions. And so I think that captured the whole link between planning and execution. That they must plan for the known. As far as possible for the things that we know. But we don't know a lot of the things that will happen, like how will the global economy turn out? How will the South African economy turn out? How will a lot of the things that are exogenous to us turn out in the next couple of years? But we have a plan, and we have an idea of what we want to do. We are ready for the first shot to be fired. And the army will be deployed, has been deployed. We are doing our necessary deployment to prepare for what we know. We hope to execute this program as planned, but we accept that when it comes to the crunch, we may have to adjust. And I hope that the parliament, the press, and the organs of oversight, when we come back and say that, look, we have to change here and there, they will be understanding rather than... Because at the end of the day, all we can say is that we tried, and history will judge us for having tried. We will go down as having tried to fight, even if it becomes difficult and we can't execute as planned. But we are going to put in our best efforts. The power requirements, we are putting some money into research and development. You know, every time a train breaks, it generates electricity. Every time a crane lifts a container, it uses electricity. But when it drops a container, it generates electricity. So, I mean, if we can capture all the electricity that is generated by trains that are breaking at this moment in South Africa today, it's a whole power station. So we are putting money into research and development. We are mobilizing engineers from the universities to come and assist us to help us develop these alternative sources of energy that we are going to be losing. How we capture the energy that we create and lose because we are not able to capture it in another form. So, I mean, the engineers must answer the question. So how do you use part of the energy that we used when we dropped the last box to lift the next box so that we at least reduce our consumption of electricity? We are exploring wind farms, especially around the ports of Port Elizabeth and Moha, looking at buying additional land there to deploy wind farms. Energy generator to drive the port with wind electricity. So we're looking at alternative sources of energy. I mean, we are now talking to Eskom about capturing this electricity that we generate and selling it back to Eskom.
So we rather than being consumers, we become also the suppliers of electricity into the grid, into the national grid. How it will work in reality is something that the engineers are under instruction to work out as soon as possible, because this is a very critical matter for the South African economy. Our environmental impact, you know, we never really measured CO2 emissions as Transnet. We've started the project to measure our CO2 emissions and to try and reduce them over the next over the 7-year period. So I think we will be able to report in our reporting. We are required to provide a report on our impact on the environment, and we will be releasing that report now with our annual financial statements in our next reporting cycle. Corruption, very difficult to legislate. You can talk to people as much as you like, but at the end of the day, some of it will happen. We will try and have an education program. We will try and show people that they are better off just getting the salary that they are earning than trying to do anything else that is... And as I said earlier, just to listen to the voices inside them will guide them to do what is correct. Mistakes in the pipelines, as you know, Chair, the original budget was about 12 billion. It went up to 23 billion. But the reasons were varied. As they were digging a trench between literally Johannesburg and Devon, they came across all sorts of things that they had not anticipated. Suddenly, they had more rain than usual. Swamps developed. And when they got to the swamps, there had to be new environmental applications. There had to be a way of treating those frogs in the swamps and removing them carefully and things like that that had not been anticipated. So it caused delays in the project. It caused delays in construction. When they got to the mountainous areas, as you know, that going between Johannesburg and Durban, you have to cross the Drakensberg. The rock formations that were there were not anticipated as soon as they started digging. And you know, the original intention was to make the pipeline 16-inch, and then it was decided for long-term security of supply, it must be made 24-inch. And so it means that the project had to change, make it bigger, the trench bigger, the pipe bigger. So all of those resulted in cost escalation and delays in the project. But now the pipe is in the ground. The 24-inch pipe is in the ground from Devon to Johannesburg up to Jameson Park. It has been turned on. There is diesel that is flowing. And what is remaining is just the final touch-ups to ensure that the pressure is correct, to ensure that the terminals are finalized, and to ensure that we can take different kinds of liquid in the pipelines. Global warming and coal. You know, it is interesting to note that Germany has decided not to use nuclear. And so they say that they are going to use coal for their electricity needs, which is an opportunity for us. But, you know, we, as I say, sometimes at Transnet, unfortunately, our job is just to tatala begala. So, and we get told, take this here and put it there. Finish. It's not your, you know, we are not there. We don't dig the coal and we don't use it. We just transport it for people that need it from point A to point B, and all we have to do is transport it efficiently and effectively. So we're interested in the policy discussions and so on and so forth, but at the end of the day, what we need, our core competence must be the transportation of what we are required to transport. I think
roundup.
I was just on
take
question all 21. Nongu has talked about the imported skills, cutting costs through cheap labor. We will discourage that, especially employing foreigners at less than what our own labor is earning. We have not done that in the past, and I don't think we will do that. In fact, we are talking about improving the conditions of our stevedores on our ports, getting them better facilities and better working conditions and dress. The 42-58 split, it means that 58% will go into new infrastructure and 42% will go into maintenance of backlog as well as current maintenance. And the increase of spending only in the sixth year is because we're ramping up. In the last 7 years, Transnet has invested 118 billion. So we have capital expenditure capabilities. We have a dedicated capital projects division, Transnet Capital Projects. We are increasing the personnel in the Transnet Capital Projects division. In fact, it may be by as much as 20% to ensure that especially the big projects of over 300 million each are managed centrally with a pool of engineers and capital project management capabilities is centralized. This capital project is based currently in Woodmead. The whole division is moving to Carlton Center. To the group offices. We are giving them about 8 floors of the Carlton Center for capital project management over the next 7 years. So we think that we'll be able to ramp up capacity to deliver these. Engineer buzzeries have been answered. The measurement of the transfer of skills. What we are doing with the transfer of skills, especially you asked about the 2,000 artisans. Now, we will have 2,000 artisans at any one point in time, which means that when people finish their artisan program, and the artisan programs take different times, some of them is 18 months, some of them is 12 months, some of them is 14 months, and so on. So as the people graduate, we replace the graduates to maintain the number at 2,000. We need about 650 artisans per annum, not 2,000. So we are training them for the economy. So we're releasing those artisans back into the job market, because part of the problem of unemployment in South Africa is a skills mismatch. There are jobs in the economy, but there are no people who have been trained to do those jobs, like electrical engineering and so on and so forth. But also this contributes to SMMEs, because those people are able to take those skills and establish small electrical repair and boiler making and all sorts of small businesses that get established in the local areas by people that have obtained the skills from us. The water backhaul opportunity is a big opportunity, just that we don't have time to put up the slide, but we will build a new line, as Mr. Gama has said. That new line will go through from Lephalale to Atlanta, and then down to Snake Brood Plant. Yeah, Root Snake Plus, and then down to, and then, but the existing line goes from Lephalale to Rustenburg, and then to Brits, Harangua, Roslyn, and Pyramid. Now, that line, the problem with that line is that between Rustenburg and Roslyn, yeah, there is a clay slog, basically a slog, so that kind of clay is not good for heavy haul rail. And that is why we're building another line that bypasses the clay. I don't know what they call it in English, but it's a type of soil that is not good for heavy haul. Yeah. So, but that line will be used for GFB and for the minerals in the Rustenburg area and so on to be transported by train.
How does that end?
No, it goes. You see, our main consolidation point for coal is MMM. So all the trains will go from Waterberg to MMM. But in the process, we will also
via Pretoria too.
Yeah,
Pretoria Witbank.
Yeah, Pretoria Witbank MMM.
And what about the problem that is the last
time? Can you put up there is for coal.
Moloto corridor is mainly passenger.
Sorry. Moloto corridor for passenger.
No, it was not necessarily for passenger only. That's why I'm asking whether you put it
It's the Maputo corridor that
no,
is
okay,
that's the link to our steel ports from
yes, it's okay. Also from steel ports.
Yeah. No, we currently don't have a line there. We have to go via
Steelport,
yeah.
But we have a line from Pretoria
to Mpumalanga.
Mpumalanga to Akhosimathebe.
Akhosimathebe to Kobesdal.
Exactly, yeah.
So there's no line. So what's the line that is there around that area? That's what
to Mabulhorn.
We don't have that phone.
From Pretoria?
I'm talking Waterbeck.
Oh, Waterbeck.
Yes.
Okay.
So I don't know whether you have looked into that because there was the economic assessment.
But now, what will we be taking to Marble Hall from Waterbeck?
No, that's why I'm saying it was just multi-faceted.
Oh, like agriculture and so on.
Diamond. So I'm saying if that was not good, it's okay. Because I was just checking
whether you
managed to link the
I think Mr. Gama will be looking into the matter, writing a very long report.
Yeah, we'll yeah. Now we've got with the Limpopo provincial government a project that is looking at a range of issues that link Mpumalanga and Limpopo in terms of agricultural produce, which is north of Polokwane, more in the sort of Banda area. Yeah. So we are looking at that, and in the next few years we will be able to come up with solutions around that. So we've signed an MOU in fact with the provincial government to deal with that, and also to link Steelport with Marble Hall through the Leiden Vest sort of area.
I'll be happy on that one. But it's fine. Can we, and I really want to say once more, we really apologize for this. That's quite an interesting topic. Should have actually dedicated the whole day for it. We had actually, but because of some issues that we could not, that were beyond our shoulders, we then had to change. That's why we had accommodated the department. Please, Mr. Molefe, if you can really afford us an opportunity to have responses on in writing so that we can understand issues even much more better. As you've had questions from members, some were also concerns, some were advices on how to approach certain things. We'd like to hear from you, and normally we give 7 days response time. If you can, I know you have all the capacity and be able to increase around your GMs and CEs as you expand with more women, actually, with women at that level. We'll also appreciate it so that we hear more of the women voices at that level. Thank you very much for really heeding to our call to come before the standing committee, the portfolio committee. We really appreciate this, and I think we are all enriched with the information that you have given us today. And we can only wish you well in that mammoth task, and hope you'll do the country proud and by making even the remote areas more economically active through this project that you'll be embarking upon. Some new, yes, some just revival of some of those projects. Thank you very much. Members, we have less than an hour with the department. I know the acting DG has been looking at his watch. I don't blame you. We will extend, of course, up to quarter two with you. We had intended to finish at 5:02 with your responses, but if a need arises, we will then go up to 0:00. Yes. Please, if you can move on quietly, and our apologies for not taking you out. We normally do that, but today, because of time, you'll pardon us. Maybe while the DC is still preparing the slides presentation, are you preparing your laptop now? Okay, let me just shake hands with them. Are we ready, DJ? Again, our apology, DJ. We know that you can see our time is just running like crazy. Colleagues, let's now focus on the department's presentation. Thank you very much for coming and your dedication. Mahetla, you're welcome. We know that you don't have much time. We expecting to finish at least around 1, so that members can have time for lunch before they go to. Okay. Can we hand over to teacher?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members of the Committee. It's a pleasure to be back with you once again. Chairperson, I'm suffering from a bit of laryngitis, so you must forgive my voice, but I hope that I'll be able to complete the presentation. We're presenting our fourth quarterly performance report to the Portfolio Committee, and we are pleased to be doing that today. Chair, the presentation will cover our fourth quarter performance regarding economic policy development, economic planning and coordination, and economic development and social dialogue. We will also look at some of the new areas of work that was not captured in our 2011-2012 performance framework. We will address progress against targets in the estimates of national expenditure, human resources, financial performance, and in the conclusion. Moving on to economic policy development, which is our program two, the quarterly outcome four report was completed together with the Department of Trade and Industry and National Treasury and accepted by Cabinet. We found that there was an improvement in year-on-year employment creation as well as continued growth in investment and the GDP. We did a survey on employment reporting for state departments and agencies. The second round of reports from the departments was completed with the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation. Currently, work is underway on improving capacity building with provinces and departments and on initiating the modeling of employment impacts with the ILO. Moving on to the Economic Development Index, an initial study was undertaken by our staff members and by the Trade and Industrial Policy Strategies Institute. I think colleagues will know them as TIPS. Progress was made in identifying important variables such as employment level, healthcare, education, and economic growth, amongst others. However, we know that more work needs to be done, namely to test proposed index against South Africa's experiences to date, to look at technical issues that arose in the study. Moving on to the new growth path and the work that we've been doing under that. Firstly, under youth employment, we've developed a discussion document and workshopped it at NEDLAC and in bilaterals with NEDLAC constituencies. The dialogue will be accelerated and concluded shortly. Under gender policy, an initial draft policy has been finalized. A second draft will be finalized by mid-June of this year. The reporting framework for assessing income inequality. This draft is finalized and was discussed at the meeting between EDT, Trade and Industry, and National Treasury staff. And then, as colleagues will know and honorable members, we also had the annual development conference, economic development conference, with the theme of infrastructure and development, held in April of this year. Moving on to Program 3, which covers economic planning and coordination, and covering the sector and spatial plans, the departmental approach to this area of work being reviewed is in the context of the infrastructure plan that has been developed by the PICC, the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission. The infrastructure plan, as adopted by Cabinet, includes both spatial and sectoral elements and shaping our work in this area. It covers, amongst others, unlocking the northern mineral deposits, shifting coal from road to rail, expanding agricultural production, development of rural areas around the Eastern Cape, and the manganese supply line. Moving on to continuing with Program 3, there's also the 23 district plan. We participated with the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform to improve infrastructure in the 23 worst served district municipalities. And there's a map on the screen to show us. It's not very clear, Chair, and my apologies for that. We are working with the CSIR to ensure that it is embedded in viable economic strategies. And we will report more on that once we've concluded our work with the CSIR. We also had... We also had a number of engagements with provincial and local government. We did a presentation on the functional regions approach to planning for infrastructure investment in the context of the 23 districts project. We trained about 100 local government officials from 5 municipalities at Wits University to broaden the economic development capacities of municipalities. We participated in the Economies of Regions Learning Network, and the focus on this was on key city regions, provinces, and national role players to share ideas and approaches to planning. We also had engagements with the Eastern Cape authorities on the green energy projects, namely on biofuels and 2 wind energy projects. We also engaged with our DFI. The minister attended a meeting of the IDC board for a strategic discussion with the new board. As acting DG, I meet on a quarterly basis with the entity heads of our DFIs. The entities will present the quarter 3 dashboards, and they also received feedback from us with regard to the Cabinet Lahotla, which was held in January. With regard to the Summit Advisory Board, we received a presentation on the merger between Summit Kula and the IDC Small Business Portfolio, and this, as you recall, Honourable Chair and members, led to the establishment and formation of CIFA. It included the merger process, the implications, and the way forward. And I'm pleased to inform the committee that we've now also reached agreement with the staff with regard to the transfer of staff in terms of Section 197 of the Labor Relations Act into CIFA, and the integration process will commence shortly. We are also finalized the IDC's corporate plan in terms of our responsibilities to the IDC. Moving on to the next area is the whole issue of leveraging of state expenditure and procurement. We reached agreement with Kabi South Africa, amongst other commitments. They committed to provide support to small and medium-sized enterprises, including by training them on tender processes. We concluded discussions with a local stationery manufacturer for the department to procure locally manufactured submissions folders instead of the imported product at prices lower than the imported product. Honourable Chairperson and members will recall during our budget vote, Minister signed an agreement with the Bantex Group around this. The involvement in local procurement regulations, including addressing obstacles to speedy implementation, working and participating with the DTI, the South African Bureau of Standards, National Treasury, and the private sector on a committee on technical standards to define and measure local content and participating in the implementation of the designation of oral solid pharmaceuticals. Okay, moving on to the green economy and the solar water heaters, starting with the solar water heaters, a total of 265,476 solar waters have been installed to date. As part of the COP17 conference, the department had a special program to install 500 solar water heaters in Groutville in KwaZulu-Natal. As government, we are also shifting to a new model with more low-pressure heaters for low-income households and improved oversight. And the department chairs an interdepartmental committee with DTI, public enterprises, Department of Energy, and ESCOM, as well as the IDC and the DBSA. For the next 3 years, government has approved 4.7 billion rand in funding for the solar water heater rollout through to 2014. We are also working with the DTI to strengthen local procurement and designation. And I can inform the committee that the designation process is almost complete, and the DTI will shortly be making the document available for departments to comment on, and it will then go to Cabinet for approval. The IDC has invested in manufacturing through its Green Industries Fund, and they hope to expect to generate close to 9,000 jobs, mostly in the installation of solar water heaters. And that would mean having to work closely with installation companies, but it's also an opportunity to grow jobs in that sector. Continuing with the green economy, Honorable Chair, we also had meetings with provincial departments during the last quarter. The Eastern Cape Provincial Government, with a view of coordinating national policy on potential wind farm developments in the former Homelands regions, and the Western Cape Provincial Government to coordinate a green economy strategy for the region. Moving on to investments in the green economy, the IDC continues to take a lead in green investments. Amongst others, of the 47 preferred bidders identified for renewable IPPs, the IDC funded 19 of them, including support for community participation as well as equity and debt finance. Now, Chair, this 19 out of 47 is for both rounds 1 and 2 of the IPP that was advertised over the last couple of months. The value of the IDC investment is about 7.5 billion rand, and technologies include wind farms, concentrated solar projects, and photovoltaic, as well as hydropower. In fact, during round two, the hydropower was the first project to be awarded in terms of this IPP. The department also participated in the climate change negotiations process. In particular, we supported the modeling and simulation processes led by the Department of Environmental Affairs and in international conferences and work groups. The IDC has finalized its pre-implementation work for a major biofuels plant near Cadoc, but implementation of this will depend on the regulatory decisions by the Department of Energy. Chair, moving on to special financing, a total of 2.467.3 million rand was disbursed during this quarter. The breakdown of funds disbursed was as follows: transfers to SAMAF 23 million, transfers to Kula 35.7 million, transfers to IDC 8.5 million, and IDC disbursements 2.4 billion rand. We also participated in the African Regional Economic Development Process, a paper on increasing South Africa's exports with member states of the Tripartite Free Trade Area was completed, and we hold annual bilateral forum with the U.S. government on African Regional Economic Development. Chair, moving on to Program 4, which deals with economic development and dialogue, and specifically around social dialogue and capacity building. The new growth path and the four accords were presented at 7 provincial capacity building workshops conducted between February and March 2012 in 7 of our provinces. The final 2 workshops for the remainder of the 2 provinces were held after the 4th quarter. These workshops were attended by all social partners at provincial level, which included business, labor, provincial government, and community-based organizations. It provided us an opportunity to bring together about 100 participants per province, including the provincial economic development departments, COSATU, FEDUSA, NAPTU, BUSA, NAPCOC, SANCO, and the Women's National Coalition. We also entered into a number of economic development agreements. We signed an agreement with Proudly South Africa to implement certain commitments of the local procurement accord. We also established the Western Cape Furniture Industry Pilot Project to enhance employment in the furniture industry through intervention in skills development and increasing cooperation between manufacturers through cluster development. We also had an agreement between SAPI and the unions to implement the training layoff scheme, and an agreement was concluded with the South African Institute of Chartered Accountants, SAICA, to provide business management and accounting support to small businesses. SAICA will establish a business hub and a training program to support small businesses small business development. Chair, as I indicated at the start, an area of work that wasn't included in the current year is around the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission. The department's mandate was expanded during the course of the year to support and coordinate the work of the PICC. These activities are not captured in the 2011-2012 performance framework. They do, however, include administrative and secretarial support to the PICC, the Management Committee, and Secretariat. Our minister chairs the political secretariat made up of ministers and deputy ministers and manages the technical team comprised of officials deployed from EDD and state-owned entities. Part of the work includes oversight over the development of the infrastructure plan, implementation framework, and various work streams. There are 17 strategic integrated projects and 153 individual components. An implementation framework has been developed, and there are discussions with a number of partners to explore funding and financing. Chair, as you will know, Minister will be doing a presentation on the work of the PICC to the committee in due course. Moving on to the estimates of financial expenditure, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, we've outlined the key indicators. The first one dealing with the implementation of the new growth path, the number of policies to mainstream the second economy, the number of engagements with provincial and local government, the number of strategic engagements with development finance institutions and or economic regulatory bodies, and the value of special financing facilitated for small businesses, targeted growth sectors and companies in distress. Chair, we've met and exceeded almost all of the targets except for the second economy, where we've had capacity problems and issues, but we have capacitated the department and we're taking that process forward, and hopefully in the current financial year we'll be able to report, give a much better report on the work that we are doing at that. On the special funding for small businesses and companies in distress, the target was 1.25 billion, but the actual was 2.47 billion, and the annual target was 5 billion rand. And I can report to the committee that the annual target that we've reached is 7.3 billion. Moving on to the E&E targets, the second slide, the following indicators are as follows. We developed and produced and reviewed a number of spatial and sector plans. We had a number of interventions in relation to promoting economic development through levering state expenditure and procurement. A number of reports on the implementation of the green economy strategy. A number of interventions to create or save jobs, the policy platform, social dialogue, and capacity building engagements, and the number of economic development agreements facilitated with our social partners. And I went into a bit of detail in the presentation around that. Chair, we've in fact exceeded most of those targets in terms of the annual targets that we have set. Moving on to staffing matters, Honourable Chairperson, in the four branches we had for the total department a total of 129 funded posts. We filled 115, of which 65 were women and 50 men. In terms of our employment equity statistics, we've broken it down into occupational bands from level 1 to 8, level 9 to 10, level 11 to 12, and then level 13 to 16. The targets are outlined as per gender and race, and I think in a previous meeting of the committee, I recall it might have been the strat plan meeting that we had also reported on the issue of employing people with disabilities. We can now report that a second person with disability will assume duty in June of this year. Moving on to recruitment, Honourable Chair, we've recruited a total of 57 employees into the department, and again we break it down in terms of race and gender and the different levels in terms of the occupational bands. Moving on to our financial performance, the overview of expenditure as at the end of the financial year, 31 March 2012. The allocated budget for the department for 2011-2012 financial year was 598.4 million rand. Expenditure in this period amounted to 578.5 million, which is 97% of the voted budget. Overall, the department underspent by 19.9 million rand, or 3%, during the 2011-2012 financial year. The department requested rollovers amounting to 2 million rand from National Treasury, and these requests were approved by National Treasury. Moving on to the financial performance, the second slide, which deals with the department's budget versus the expenditure and projections. We outline the different areas of funding, the adjusted budget pre-verament, the verements approved by National Treasury, the adjusted budget post-verement, and then year-to-date expenditure as at 30th March 2012, the percentage spent, the underspend, and then the percentage of underspend. Chair, those includes allocations for compensation of employees, goods and services, transfers, capital, the total amount received by EDD, the EDD transfers to its entities, and then EDD's total, which excludes transfers. With regard to an overview of our revenue, revenue collection for the financial year 2011-2012 was 591.8 million rands, or 143% of the estimated revenue of 243.8 million rand for the year as a whole. Now, most of this revenue came from fines and penalties imposed by the Competition Commission and the Competition Tribunal. The amount that we received during the 2011-2012 year from those fines and penalties was approximately 538 million rand. And there was also dividends received from the IDC, which was approximately 50 million rand for the 2011-2012 financial year. And honorable members, these figures are still subject to being audited, and there could be slight variation as we are part of the audit at the moment. Chair, that concludes the presentation, and I'd like to thank the Honourable Chair and members for the opportunity.
Thanks, SMDG. Is this a report or just a presentation? Because we haven't received any report.
Chair, this is the presentation. We will make the report available to the
committee. Oh, we will appreciate that because we'd want to get into the details.
Okay.
Thanks very much, members. Here's the report.
Chair, I'm mindful of the time, so I'll be short and quick. I just wanted to touch on the item on page 3. There's just two or three quick issues. The one on page 3 that talks about youth employment. You say that there's a discussion document workshopped at NEDLAC. Is this a new document, or is it some new plan that you have, or is it what the President and the Minister of Finance had talked about in terms of the youth wage subsidy? Is that in reference to that, or is it something new that you're presenting? If you could please just explain that. And on page 5, when you talk about SAMAF, we had at our last meeting a presentation on the IDC Amendment Act, or the act that governs the IDC's establishment. And there was a comment that was made by the lady, I think it was Charmaine, I don't remember the name, where she talked about it was interesting to hear a response as to under which provisions of the law was this merger concluded. So I'm putting that same question to you, and I wonder if you would share your opinion on that.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Mr.
Mabu? Chair, mine is just one question of clarity. On slide 23, where you talk about the overview expenditure, as of 31st of March 2012, you talk about the department underspent for 19.9 million or 3%. I just want to know what the reason is for that underspending. Thank you.
Thanks,
thanks, Chairperson. Firstly, Chair, I want to check. Maybe it's in the report, but for our benefit, how many distressed companies were, benefited from this training layoff schemes? I know the money, but the companies or people, I'll say, who were trained. The staff complement. The staff complement, usually we keep on asking this, we've got people in the provinces who are employed by the national department, EDD. It's like a suggestion we've been saying, when you go to the provinces, you'll find the department team. You just get one person in that province, one in that one. Do you have any strategy of increasing the number of staff in the provinces instead of having all of them in Pretoria? Lastly, Chair, the fines. Last time we were told that the penalties, fines, are sent back to the Treasury, not to the Department. But here now you are saying you have received this from fines. How is it the Treasury who says, I'm giving you this, it's from the fines, or it's a Treasury's discretion? I want to check that one together with the ITC. If you say ITC has given you so much, some of the funds, was it budgeted for? That money, was it there when you were tabling your strike plan and your budget? Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Reverend President. Maybe take the Mr. Dimabas and then Mr. Hussein will come after.
Yes, Chairman, the questions or concerns are covered in the coming report, I'm not sure. But on page 8, on the training of government officials from local government, what was the criteria for identifying those municipalities and officials as well? And also at which level are those officials? And about the installation of solar heaters, if we can get the specific areas by province or whatever area that benefited. And on the former homeland, is there any reason why we still talk about former homelands and not specify that the area, to say in which area this was after? Thank you.
Thanks,
Thanks, Comrade Chair. Thanks for the input. Mine is based more on the observation as one interacts with community members, prospective entrepreneurs, as well as SMEs and cooperatives. Do we have a plan which we think will take cooperatives? Because in my observation, these cooperatives are just stuck in mud. And I think the department is trying to pull them out of that mud into entrepreneurship. But it's not happening. I don't know whether my observation is shared by the department, and if it is, what plans is the department will the department execute to achieve that? Because at the end of the day, that is what will narrow the gap between the rich and the poor, and that is what will create jobs. But that's one question. The second one is. Is the department successfully touching all the corners of South Africa to eradicate poverty? You know, is there a plan? And is the department adequately staffed to achieve that? Because, you know, if that doesn't happen, we are going to find that we are in trouble. I know you're reporting on what has happened, but if you my questions could be responded to in that context. And all the people with disabilities, I wish the department could try a little bit more than what is being rendered. You know, if we take into account the many people with disabilities in our country. Thanks, Kobeche.
Chair, thank you for the second opportunity. I've forgotten to raise just one question, and that is on the issue of the local procurement accords. When can we expect to see some sort of a progress report on the benefits that are starting to come out of these local procurement accords? I know it's been signed fairly recently, but at some stage I'm sure there must be some tracking of it.
And
Chair, I'm not sure. I think maybe there is a mistake on page 8, or page 3, 4. You said the last, this is slide 8, engagement with Eastern Cape authorities on 3 green energy, but you mentioned 2. Why not the third one? Or is it an omission?
Thank you. Just to add my question. DG, normally we need to get the report with this presentation because this is supporting just the summary of the report. On the slide dealing with the program, economic policy program on NGP. Can we be finished with this document on the discussion document that was workshopped? So that we can familiarize ourselves on the issues in that. And then you're saying here there's a draft gender policy. Is that for the department? Because this is the economic policy development. Is the gender policy for the department? And or is it for the entire government, and why would it be in our department and not in the Ministry of Gender, Youth and People Living with Disabilities? Because I don't remember this being part of your your strategic plan. The framework, maybe let me leave it for now and just ask you why on page, mine will say page 6, but there's under sector and the same program, 3 sector and special plans. Why are we repeating on PICC now? Because it wasn't part of the, as you correctly said, in the of the 2011 plan. Because I don't think it's appropriately, it should be coming for next time in our first quarter, not now. First quarter of the 2012. Because you are now reporting on the previous year's indicators and outcome. Let me leave some of them were asked by members. Okay. I just want to emphasize also because in the briefing with the where Mem Chair of the new entity. Yes, Ms. Van Rensburg. Ms. Rensburg. she indicated that there was no need, for instance, to come. I think this is the matter that was raised by Mr. Hussein for the new entity to be legislated. I mean, to amend the legislation because the new entity was already covered under the IDC Act provisions. We tried to look at that, even together with our legal advisors. We couldn't find anywhere. Maybe you can assist us as to which area within the IDC Act is that covered. Because we're trying to understand how did, you know, the new entity come about. My last question would be on pay, on the, okay, financial performance. You're saying your under expenditure is 3%. Is it of the total, inclusive of transfers? Or is it only of your total income of the department, excluding transfers? Because your own income would be 90.7 million, excluding, in as far as the information you've just given us is concerned. Can I then hand over to Tisha for response?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members. I'm going to start off, Chair, and I'll ask my colleagues to come in. So the first one, the question that was raised by the Honourable Hussain around youth employment, and the Chair also raised the issue of whether the document can be made available, and we will make the documents available to the committee through the secretariat. The document was developed within the department together with the constituencies that make up NEDLAC and presented there. Neither our DDG has been dealing with that matter, so I'm going to ask her to give the committee an update on where we are and a brief indication of the content thereof. So I don't know if you would like her to respond on that now, Chi, or whether I should go through the others first. Okay.
I mean, the question was also about the link to the wage subsidy. What happened was when they were discussing the wage subsidy with stakeholders, people were saying, but you can't see this in isolation. And part of Outcome 4, in fact, is that we should develop a multi-pronged strategy on youth employment. So what the document does is it, firstly, we checked with all the other departments what they're doing, and then we tried to say what could we upscale in the short run that would have an impact in the short run, as well as what could we do in the longer run. In the short run, the critical issues do tend to be direct employment schemes. There are also some things around issues very specific to youth, like, for instance, the infection rate with HIV/AIDS, which prevents people getting jobs or can if they don't get treatment, takes place very much when people are young. Also childcare, particularly for women, and teen pregnancies. So the argument is we have to address those issues. In the longer term, it's about how you manage the growth of employment under the new growth path proposals in ways that will also particularly create entry-level positions. I will say that there's a debate about are young people more likely to be unemployed because there's simply not enough jobs and they're at the back of the queue, or are they more likely to be unemployed because they're inexperienced? The evidence is that it's more a queuing problem. That is, if we can bring down overall unemployment everywhere in the world, including here, youth unemployment is about twice as high as overall unemployment. It's just that our underlying employment rate is extraordinarily high by international standards. Nonetheless, we would like young people to have, absolutely make sure that they do benefit as the economy grows. So, I mean, the sectors that have grown employment, like construction, in fact, tend to have more young people in them already than other sectors that have not grown, like, for instance, the educational profession. Anyway, in that context, of the employment schemes, one of them is the wage subsidy. And we are negotiating that, and there's quite close to agreement, I think. But they still have to finalize it. And I do think there's reluctance on the part of all the stakeholders to say, we'll pull out one measure, drive that one measure, which is a relatively expensive measure, and there may be other measures that, have lower opportunity costs to achieve those aims. So that's what we're looking at. Oh, and of course, I forgot to say, and of course, education and training is a critical issue for young people. And so we have to engage with that. I do think that the green paper on post-secondary education is sort of critical in that context and how we ensure that implementation works. So the process is that we workshopped it with the cluster, then we had an informal workshop at NEDLAC because we didn't yet have a mandate from Cabinet, which we would for a formal engagement at NEDLAC, and we are going to try and speed that up, that whole process up now. One of the things about NEDLAC is it can take a long time to get the meetings to take place, but we are trying to accelerate just holding the meetings and having the discussions go forward. And we'd be happy to supply it. I would say it's basically a framework document. It's not trying to lay down. It's trying to say what are the directions we have to emphasize going forward, more than it is trying to say here are very specific programs in every case.
So it's generally meant for the processes at the NEDLAC level, not for any other process.
Well, I mean, the idea is we're engaging at NEDLAC because, if you want to create employment, you do absolutely have to talk to your stakeholders. And there is a genuine concern amongst workers, which goes like this. If you just grow youth employment and you don't grow overall employment, then there will be displacement and there are serious costs for displacement. Now, all the programs we're looking at are designed to, most of them are designed to actually grow employment, so that's not such a big concern. But people do want reassurance because from their point of view, if you lose jobs on the one hand, it doesn't really matter if you gain them on the other hand. And you can argue that for someone who's been employed for 10 years, for instance, to lose employment is as much of a social cost as for someone who's 18 or 19, not to get a job, you see what I mean? So it doesn't help us to try. We have to set up a situation where everybody gains. So that's, I think, a critical issue for all of us. We talk to stakeholders to say what is viable as well as what's desirable, and that's why we went to NEDLAC to start looking at this. But when it's finalized, what we would hope is it leads to strengthening of particular programs and tweaking some of the programs to ensure that they're more friendly to youth. So the areas that would have to be upscaled specifically would be childcare and the issues around education and training and things like second chance per trick, all of those issues,
the issues that you would want to see ensure have opportunities for youth through the overall employment creation program, but especially Community Works, EPWP, and then the CU subsidy.
Thank you, Chair. The Honourable Hussein also raised the issue of SAMAF and the IDC Amendment Act and under which provisions of the law was the various agreements concluded. And Chair, I think you also raised that point. Chair, in terms of the IDC Act, I will come back to the committee with a specific section of that. But if I can maybe report to the Honourable Committee that the merger was approved by Cabinet. It was done in terms of legislation with regard to the merger of entities, Section 51G of the PFMA, whereby the Minister of Finance have approved the small business finance entity to be established as a wholly owned entity or subsidiary of the IDC. The transfer of SAMAF was in terms of the Public Service Act, and this was Section 3 of the Public Service Act, and this was signed off after Cabinet approval by the late Minister Padiachi. And then we also had to deal with the transfer of assets and liabilities and staff. The transfer of assets and liabilities was in terms of Section 42 of the PFMA. And as I indicated in my presentation, the transfer of staff was in terms of Section 197 of the Labour Relations Act. Now, Chair, I also note the comments that you made in terms of looking at this specifically, and we will come back to the committee on the issue which you have raised in relation to the IDC Act, and we'll give that in writing to the committee. The Honourable Bu raised the issue of underspending on slide 23. I'm going to ask the CFO to respond to that, but I think a key issue is that a major part of why there was an underspend was because of not appointing the full complement of staff. Mm. And I think previously the minister had indicated that the department was not going to simply appoint staff for the sake of filling posts, but it was the caliber and quality of staff that was required to help the department do its policy work and so on. And then I think there was some underspending around our capital budget as well. But the CFO can come in and add to that.
No, DJ, I think you've covered it well. But maybe let me somehow deal with the question that the Honourable Chair has raised. The 3%. 3% is 3% of the entire 598, including transfers. Excluding transfers, it's 18%. Thank you. Or 19 million.
So the actual underspending of the department would be 18%?
No, it's 3% on the 598 million. It's 3%. But to contextualize it, excluding transfers, underspending is 18% or 19 million.
Then the question would be, how much have the transfers been underspent on? Because you transferred, you don't have control over that.
Yes.
And then there is an expenditure by those entities where you are transferring, or universities or whatever. You wouldn't have a total picture of how much have they. Because you are now, when you look at under expenditure, you look at what the department has done, not what those entities have done. So that's why I'm saying it's not a true reflection, because what you are giving us here is what the department has not been able to spend, not what the entire 500 and something has not been able to spend. Am I not correct on that?
No.
You are giving us on the 90.7 million. Yes, can you clarify that?
I don't want to say the honourable chair is wrong, but
you can say that.
out of respect, but the 19 million under expenditure is actually total under expenditure for the department. Transfers were spent 100%. So that 19 million is also applicable to the total budget or budget excluding transfers. That's what I'm trying to explain. But if it's budget excluding transfers, it's 18% under expenditure of the 121 million. If it includes transfers, it's 3% of the 598. That's what I'm trying to explain.
So you have not spent 18% of your total in the department. Yeah, that's what I was trying to say to you. So you are agreeing. I'm not wrong. Yes. Okay. Thank you. Because it gives us a right picture then when you say it like that, the correct picture. Otherwise, because we'd want to go back to the entities and check their transfers, how much have they spent their transfers. And you'll find that the picture is something else. Yeah. Okay. Any other questions that you'd want to respond to?
Chair, I think the Honourable Mthuli raised the issue of the distressed companies and the number of companies who benefited from that, both in terms of people and companies. And then there was the issue, or maybe let's deal with that, Siva, then if you want to respond to that.
I don't actually have the figures in social dialogue. We can get them in
7 minutes. Can we send or bring the figures to you around that?
Okay.
So, around the distressed companies and the number of people that are affected. Okay. My apologies for that, Honourable Mthuli. With regard to the staff complement and people that are employed in provinces, and the point you raised that EDD appoints very few people in each province, and do we have a plan to increase? My understanding is that EDD as the national department don't employ staff in each of the provinces. Those are the provincial economic development departments. We have staff in Pretoria, and then we have sessional staff in Cape Town. But we do, and through the MINMEX, we know that those provincial departments are very understaffed, and they have raised that with us in terms of how we as the national department can help to capacitate those provincial departments. I don't know if Molefe wants to add to what I've said.
Not the DG has covered the responses fully, because another chair is that we, as a national department, we're only looking at the department on a national level, but respective departments in provinces.
Can I clarify, Chair? I was naming people like those people who were deployed by SAMAF at provincial. You know the coordination, the entities who are all over the provinces.
Chair, Neva also wants to come in, but if I can say, if it's with regard to the entities, I know that the IDC have offices in all of the provinces and some of the entities, but if you recall when we did the strat plans, the same issue arose and concern was raised by the committee members, particularly about access to rural poor communities. And the entities said that they will look at that. I think the committee at the time also raised about the sharing of offices between CEDA, CIFA, and the IDC so that people can have better access to those entities and so on. We will have to get a breakdown of the staff of those entities in the different regions, and we can ask them and provide that to the committee chair.
Yeah. I don't know if Ms. Honourable Mthuli was there when the CIFA was here. when we met with CIFA.
Yeah.
Okay. So remember, the Mem Rensberg indicated that they are looking at that matter of spreading the. Yeah, but for the department, it doesn't have regional offices or provincial offices. We understand that you're working through provincial departments of provincial government.
I think we've covered that. Then the issue of the fine, I'm
not able to respond from the Competition Commission.
I think Honorable Ndul is correct. We had indicated that the fines are supposed to be surrendered to the National Revenue Fund, and that's correct. But they are surrendered via first being transferred from Competition Commission to the department, and the department then surrender to the National Revenue Fund. So we are more like a bridge, and that's it's legislated like that. But we don't really play an active role in collecting. They're just transferred, we reconcile, and we surrender over to the National Revenue Fund. Thank you.
Okay. I think next time you have to also tell us why, in terms of your project, why are they not part of your projection? In terms of revenue collection, why are they only left into the entities? Because you are a conduit, you are serving as a conduit. So it has to be the department's overall own revenue generation projection.
Hello, I just want to make sure that I understand you very correctly.
Yes. The entities would normally tell us this would be our projected income. But I don't see it normally coming from the department budget in terms of your anticipated income generation, inclusive of, for instance, what the entities have budgeted for. Am I correct or wrong?
No, you're correct. However, we do include the revenue that we collect from Competition Commission into our projections here. It is covered there. Yes. We were under projecting because it's quite difficult to project how many companies are going to be fined. You know. But if you can look at the new budget, Treasury put us under pressure to actually up it, but we are projecting.
Because you can use the experience. You know already how many are you
looking at? Yeah. I'm sorry, but our budget, remember, is activity-driven. It's not historically, you know, the new project over. But you are raising a very good point. We have challenges in projecting. But the trend shows that the Competition Commission has been collecting more and more. So we can actually take comfort on that one. I agree with the member.
Any other questions?
Yeah, Chair, very quickly, on the solar water input breakdown for carbon, I can very quickly, if I can make out the chart.
You can provide it in writing.
Can we provide it? Okay. So we'll give that in writing to the committee. We do have a breakdown for carbon. And then can we also come back to the committee in writing on the training of the local government official, the criteria, and which municipalities were used. So we'll come back to you. On the homeland issue, I agree with what the honourable members are saying, and we'll give a breakdown on the areas
But I think we cannot also ignore the legacy of the past. And if we look at the 23 areas that were identified, they all fall to former homelands. And so we were trying to give an indication of where that problem is.
Okay, can I just say they were identified by saying where these households least likely to have water, least likely to have electricity, and other basic services. So I do think you can't just ignore that, that legacy that shapes that space. I think it's also used as a reference so that you can see how things have improved in terms of underdevelopment. That's why in our, even I think the planning commission has used that. I think also the National Treasury has used that in their document. Just for the purposes of tracking, I think it's still relevant. We need a new name, which is that's where we run into trouble. I do hear that. If we need a new name, which is not offensive, that's the trouble, if you see what I mean. The homeland. They were homeland.
Okay, are we done to see, can we request that you respond to the writing in the interest of time?
Okay, we can definitely do that just on the collection of the biofuels and the wind energy projects, the two wind energy projects, and the one biofuel giving it a total of three. So I should have explained that. No, it's two wind energy projects and biofuels. And then on the local procurement accord, Chair, we are making progress, and we will bring reports once we've concluded the assessment with the different companies and stakeholders that we are working with at the NEDLAC level. And then I think if we agree, Chair, based on what you're saying, there's about four or five areas that we've not covered that we can put in writing together with the report to the committee.
We will appreciate that. Thank you.